Good afternoon. This is Tamara reading the Rantoul Press for the week of October 21st. We'll start with the local news. RTHS Drama Club to present Almost Maine. It's become the most performed play in high schools, surpassing Shakespeare. Rantoul Township High School Drama Club's cast of Almost Maine will show people why early next month. Almost Maine is 9 short plays about love, loss, and how people grow together and apart in relationships. Director Michael Matthews called it just a really wonderful, whimsical sort of show. For the most part, it has a fairly upbeat, optimistic view on love, but it doesn't get away from the fact that, at times, things don't go particularly well. It all happens in a small, unincorporated township in Maine. Almost all of the short plays feature just 2-person casts. Most of the cast are in only 1 play. The cast includes several veterans of the RTHS stage, but some newbies as well. Quite a few freshmen and sophomores, Matthews said. We have a core group of seniors who have been in RTHS plays since freshman year. Comprising the cast are Ocean Beard, Victor Bradley, Ashley Bunting, Sabrina Bunting, Ashley Bauer, Elena Bauer, Kennedy Carrico, Bria Connolly, A.J. Garcia, Brianna Hageman, Adrian Navarette, Simon Walker, Jakira K. Wilson, and Ashton Jones. Almost Maine by John Cariani will be presented at 7 p.m. November 1st, 2nd, and 3rd in the RTHS Cafetorium. Tickets are available at the door. Trick-or-treat hours set in area communities. All are for Halloween, Wednesday, October 31st. In Fisher, 5:30 to 8 p.m. Gifford, 6 to 8 p.m. Ludlow, 6 to 8 p.m. Paxton, 5 to 8 p.m., Wednesday, October 31st. At 4 p.m., a costume parade will be held in downtown Paxton, and children will be able to fill up their bags by trick-or-treating at participating businesses on Market Street. In Potomac, 5:30 to 8:30 p.m., Rantoul, 6 to 8 p.m., and Thomasboro, 6 to 8 p.m. Steinberg to present latest Artist Spotlight at Library. Faith Steinberg from the Rantoul Public Library's card-making group will be featured artist in the monthly Local Artist Spotlight. She will be present from 9 a.m. to noon, Saturday, October 27th, at the library to lead a make-and-take event to highlight the cards the library has for donation to its roof fund. All materials will be provided. The Local Artist Spotlight is a new monthly event that features authors, artists, musicians, and a variety of other styles of the arts. Occurring every last Saturday of the month, the Spotlight features one artist or group at a time and is an event for the entire family. As the artist for the month is responsible for making the Spotlight their own, no two events will be the same. The Local Spotlight is free, but a small donation will be taken for the Raise the Roof fundraiser, with proceeds being split between the artist and the library's fundraiser. There will be no Spotlight in November and December due to Thanksgiving and Christmas, but it will return in January. Halloween Extravaganza set October 29th at RTHS. The 2018 Halloween Extravaganza hosted by the Future Business Leaders of America Interact Club, Student Council, and National Honor Society students will take place from 5 to 6:30 p.m. Monday, October 29th at Rantoul Township High School. There will be trick-or-treating, a costume contest, games, arts and crafts, and face painting. The activities will take place in the cafetorium and small gym. Seventh Person picks up material to run for Rantoul Village Board. Another week, another person has picked up a candidate packet from Village Clerk Mike Graham to run for the Rantoul Village Board. Graham said Beverly Robinson picked up a candidate packet Friday afternoon. That brings to 7 the number of individuals who have picked up the packets from Graham. There could be more, considering a run at the Village Board, as individuals can also obtain packets from the Champaign County Clerk's website. Having obtained the election packets is also no guarantee an individual will go ahead and run for the office. A person could decide not to seek election. Others having picked up the packets from Graham are Jasmine Boyce, Jan Falvey, Sherry Johnson, Mark Owen Jr., the Reverend Mark Wilkerson, and Gary Wilson. Johnson was recently appointed to fill the unexpired board seat of Rich Medland, who resigned to take a job out of town, but Johnson must run for election to retain the post. Wilson is a former board member who mounted an unsuccessful bid for mayor. None of the incumbents, Jennifer Fox, Hank Gammel, and Chad Smith, had picked up election material from Graham. Residents have until the filing deadline to pick up election packets. Petitions may be picked up and filed with Village Clerk Mike Graham at his office at 117 East Sangamon Avenue. The filing period is December 10th through 17th. Benefits of small-town airports are many, if towns can find a way to keep them open. Cars line several rows of the parking lot at the former Chanute Air Force Base on a windy Wednesday, but only a few of them are there for the airport. Across the way, old, decrepit military aircraft sit outside the deserted museum on the Air Force's campus, soon to be disposed of. On windy days like this or cloudy days, aircraft divert to other, larger airports because Rantoul doesn't have the equipment necessary for them to land in inclement weather. But on some days, Operations Manager Corky Vericker and General Manager Eric Vences spend their entire shift shuttling from plane to plane, servicing customers who land their small aircraft the same place those impressive military aircraft once touched down. "Some days Eric and I don't even see each other," Vericker said. "This small airport is the last vestige of an aeronautical history that defined Rantoul, a self-sustaining airport that survived while the town shrunk with the departure of the base. It's one of the seven airports in the News Gazette's coverage area still standing. The benefits of having one are generally intangible. They're a tool for the city to attract new business and give local farmers a place to base their crop sprayers. They're unnoticeable when they're dormant and sometimes extremely noticeable when used. For a small town, an airport can be a boon, a piece of a large puzzle that includes schools, highways, and various other instruments of infrastructure." It's hard to put a financial number on any one of those things, Monticello's Mike Atwood said. "And I'm not attempting to rank them in any way, but there are probably 50 things like that that make a community like Monticello. One local airport is fighting for its life, and one recently found new life, while the Rantoul National Aviation Center keeps alive a piece of a proud past that is fading away." In Paxton, offer by Tuscola Airport owner too good to pass. Local pilot Richard Kingery tries to keep it under control by spraying periodically, but grass still sprouts up from the cracks in the asphalt at the Paxton Municipal Airport, a small airport that is in need of improvements. Those improvements are soon to come. Mayor Bill Ingold and the town of Paxton weren't looking for a buyer for it when they were approached by David Rupsa, who owns the Tuscola Airport. The offer, though, was too good to turn down. "You look around, you don't see a lot of municipal airports being sold right now," Ingold said. "The downsides of the six-figure sale are few and far between. Rupsis has agreed to keep the airport public for at least 30 years, and he'll resurface the runway and build a self-service fuel system, among other improvements. The airport will also switch from costing the city a modest amount of money each year to bringing in tax revenue. It'll be a major benefit all the way round, I look at it," Ingold said. "The airport is home to several small aircraft, and it's also used periodically by businesses and every so often for medical emergencies, when a patient needs to be airlifted. The airport was originally built to serve the purposes of a local businessman who flew to and from another business he owned out of state. Now it's a selling point when Ingold speaks with businesses that may want to locate in Paxton. We've tried to bring other businesses to town, and that's one of the things that we tell them is an advantage to being in Paxton is that we do have an airport," Ingold said. "If they have the advantage of being able to fly a small plane in, it's definitely an advantage to the city." Rantoul, still home to 50 takeoffs and landings a day. When Chanute shut its doors in 1993, Major General Frank Elliott made sure not all was lost as far as Rantoul's connection to the world of aviation. He knew what was going on, and he knew how beneficial having a general aviation airport here would be for the city, Vericker said. Rantoul National Aviation Center isn't quite the iconic hub that Chanute once was, but it does have something the old Air Force Base didn't toward the end of its life, operational runways. After serving as strictly a training ground the last several years of its existence, the runways were repaved and wiring and lighting was replaced to make it usable. The original intent, Vences said, was to attract a United Airlines maintenance hub that went to Indianapolis. That maintenance hub eventually closed. It would have been a second hit to Rantoul if that did happen, Vences said. Today, Vences said 13 to 15 aircraft are stationed at the airport, comprised of crop sprayers and private aircraft. But the airport is also used by other aircraft. The facility has around 50 takeoffs and landings each day. Some of those come from students flying in and taking off from Willard Airport, some from larger private jets with 12 to 16 passengers, and others from various transient aircraft that stop for fuel. Its runways aren't long enough for commercial jets, but Vences said that in the unlikely scenario the airport did receive a commitment from an airline, extending them would be possible. The airport hosts several special events throughout the year, including the Half Century of Progress show, a four-day farm show that draws people from across the country, and shuts down the airport briefly every other summer. On that windy Wednesday when the parking lot was filled with workers at the adjacent AT&T office, Vences was preparing for a meeting with representatives from a prospective special event. Along with fuel sales and building leases, that's what keeps the airport self-sustaining as an aeronautical hub. Vereker is just thankful that Elliot had the foresight to keep the town's aeronautical identity alive. He always looked ahead, Vereker said, and I'm very thankful that he did press the right buttons. Monticello? We find ourselves in the 11th hour. Three members of the Illini Gliders Club fiddled with their plane in a hangar at Monticello Airport late Thursday afternoon, preparing it for a day they hoped would never come. The converted crop duster needed repairs, they knew, if it was going to bring each of their gliders thousands of feet in the air, where they would then drop the plane so it could float off to Danville, which they've begrudgingly named the new home of their club. For as long as any of the club members can remember, their base has been in Monticello. But come February, the conveniently small airport with a grass runway probably won't even exist, and the hangar that they've invested tens of thousands of dollars in will be demolished at the glider club's expense. That uncertainty has caused the club to dwindle from 50 to around 15. It really was the reason for the decline of the club, said Illini Glider Club instructor Jim Humphrey. Passers-by who see the large grass field adorned with two hangars, a small building, and two gas tanks might not know what they were looking at. That's one of the reasons it's been so difficult to get the public engaged on an airport that is fighting for its life. The guy walking down the street, it's very hard to articulate to them why the airport has an impact, but it does, said Atwood, who chairs a committee trying to keep the airport alive. We can sit back and say, yeah, there's value to this, but it's pretty hard to quantify. The airport has existed on that spot for more than 60 years. While the city officially controls the airport, the land is leased from the Kratz family, which has owned it and the surrounding farmland for generations. That lease, which is paid by an organization called Sage Air and the Illini Gliders, runs out in February, and the family isn't interested in renewing it, even though the airport has offered to pay double what the family could earn from turning it back into farmland. John Corley has worked for more than a decade to try to make sure the airport remained open and viable. Originally, he helped lead a push to relocate the airport, which could have been done via a grant from the FAA. The grant slowly dwindled, though, and now relocation isn't considered a realistic possibility. As it kept getting moved further and further down the line, we find ourselves in the 11th hour, trying to find a solution, Corley said. In total, the city pays $5,000 a year for the airport, most of which Atwood says goes to mowing the grass. The airport is used for crop dusters and hobbyists, but Corley thinks it means more. My interest is entirely in the benefit of preserving the future of Monticello, he said. I would make the same effort to support any of the other things that are important to the city, like the schools, like the exits off of Interstate 72, the various other things that are important, just like the airport. If the airport were to continue operations, the FFA would mandate it make some costly changes. But a local group has agreed to pay those costs. The fact that those hurdles are mostly clear makes the probable end result all the more frustrating. You've got the resources available. It seems that you should be able to get this accomplished, Atwood said. But you're dealing with private property, and if the owner of the private property is not willing to let you continue there, then you just can't. State honors victims of I-57 shootout near Paxton. William Bill Case will always be remembered as a mentor to his younger brother Bob. Bob recalls how he would look up to Bill as the two participated in track and field at Paxton Community High School in the 1960s, and every time Bill would set a record, Bob would try to beat it. I was always looking up to him for what he would share with me, and then when he joined the Mormon religion, I was even more impressed as to the vastness of what all he was trying to do with his life, Bob Case said. 2 years Bob's elder, Bill Case, would eventually become a Paxton patrolman, and Bob would wonder how his brother, who as a teenager would run around town raising hell, could suddenly be enforcing the law and doing things right. I asked him once, "Bill, how do you do that? How do you give a ticket to your friends that you used to run with?" And he says, "It's easy. If it's against the law, you get a ticket," recalled Bob Case, now living in Jacksonville, Florida. Bill Case will always be the brother whom Bob envied. Today, however, Bill Case is also remembered as a hero. On Monday morning, the Paxton community and state of Illinois paid tribute to Mr. Case and others involved in a shootout with members of a Michigan family on Interstate 57 south of Paxton. The bloody gun battle of April 7th, 1979, claimed the lives of Mr. Case, State Trooper Michael McCarter, and a civilian, Donald Weiss, who was riding with Mr. McCarter, his brother-in-law. Paxton patrolman Larry Hale was also wounded but recovered. In dedicating the overpass crossing I-57 where the shootout took place as the McCarter Case Weiss Hale Memorial Overpass, Paxton Mayor Bill Engle told the victims' family members and friends that he hoped the honor would serve as a permanent reminder of the fallen officer's contributions to serve and protect the safety of the public. A couple of hundred people attended Monday's ceremony at the Paxton Firehouse, including officers from the Illinois State Police and Paxton Police Department, and family members and friends of Mr. Case, Mr. McCarter, Mr. Weiss, and Hale. Earlier, signs commemorating the overpass at the site of the shootout were installed on both southbound and northbound I-57. The 7-foot-wide, 42-inch-tall signs are brown with white lettering. "It's a very huge honor. This moment had been a long time coming. The legislation memorializing the overpass, House Joint Resolution 21, was introduced by Representative Tom Bennett, Republican Gibson City, on February 6, 2017, but it took more than a year to get through both the House and Senate and be signed by Governor Bruce Rauner. Family members of the fallen officers were grateful for the recognition. "It's certainly been a long time coming," said Mr. McCarter's only son, Patrick, who made the trip from his hometown of Indianapolis to see his dad honored. "It's very bittersweet. We certainly still miss him every day, but we're very thankful that the state government has been so diligent, and specifically Tom Bennett, in keeping this issue alive and making sure that this isn't forgotten, and ensuring that this gets done, and not just for my father, but for all four men. It's a very huge honor." Bill Bryant, a son of Mr. Weiss and nephew of Mr. McCarter, said it was nice to hear them finally recognized as the heroes they are. "The family's known their heroics for many years," Bryant said. Among the several family members of Mr. Case in attendance were his widow, Linda, and daughter, Angela. Mr. Case was only 32 years old when he was killed by gunfire near the overpass at Ford County Road 200 North. "It means the world," his daughter said about the commemoration, her eyes tearing up. "I mean, I don't remember much about my father, but it's just an honor, and just to be able to meet some of the people who knew him, it's great." "It just means a lot that his sacrifice is recognized," Bill Case's widow said. "He was kind. He was a hard worker. He was a great father, a great husband. He was just an all-around wonderful guy. We're here for you." The emotions were running high Monday for Hale. The chance to meet the family members of his fallen comrades was a highlight for the 66-year-old retiree, who is now living in Henry County in Tennessee. "It was absolutely awesome," Hale said. "A lot of people I didn't recognize. I guess my eyes are getting old or something." Hale will forever be haunted by the shootout, but having a permanent reminder of the officers and civilian who died in it helps. "It's just something that should have been done, and I appreciate that it has been done," Hale said. "But I don't think there's ever going to be any closure, especially for the families of the victims." Bennett called the men who died in the shootout and Hale heroes to this community and the state of Illinois. He said he hoped the memorial signs might in some small way help bring some sense of closure to their family members and friends. "We are humbled and grateful for the sacrifices that have been made by these fine young men," added State Senator Jason Barrickman, Republican Bloomington, who was the chief sponsor of the House Joint Resolution 21 in the Senate. Illinois State Police Director Leo P. Schmidt said police are always there to support their comrades and their families, and Monday's ceremony showed it. "We're here for you," Schmidt told the fallen officers' family members. "That's what this is all about. We remember our fallen troopers, but we're here for you. We'll forever talk about them. What we need to do and what we do is we never forget. We never forget the families who are left behind. We never forget those officers that we lose. We tell their stories over and over. It's what we do." We'll turn now to the death notices for the week. Beverly Arnold, 77, of Gibson City, mother of a Rantoul resident, died at 12:12 p.m. Saturday, October 20th, at Mendota Lutheran Home in Mendota. Her funeral service was held Thursday, October 25th, at Pontoppidan Lutheran Church, rural Elliott, burial in the church cemetery. Memorials may be made to the Pontoppidan Lutheran Church Cemetery. Memories of her life may be posted on her tribute wall at lambyoungfh.com. Marilyn Vive Banner, 92, of Champaign, formerly of the Dewey Fisher area, died September 21st in Champaign. A memorial celebration is planned for 11 a.m. Saturday, October 27th, at Fisher United Methodist Church, 101 East Sangamon Street, Fisher. An hour of visitation with the family will precede the service. Memorials may be directed to the Fisher United Methodist Church or the CU Symphony Guild. Online condolences can be shared with her family at morganmemorialhome.com. Phyllis J. Bean, formerly of Villa Grove, sister of a Gifford resident, died at 4:12 a.m. Friday, October 19th at Hawthorne Inn, Danville. Funeral services were held Tuesday, October 23rd at Joins Funeral Home, Villa Grove, burial in Villa Grove Cemetery. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Bob Clare, 76, of Catlin, brother of a Gifford resident, died Saturday evening, October 20th at Champaign-Urbana Nursing and Rehab, Savoy. A funeral mass was held Friday, October 26th at St. Lawrence Catholic Church, Penfield. Burial will be in St. Lawrence Cemetery. Memorials may be made to curepsp.org, a charity developed to raise research funds for progressive supranuclear palsy. Percy Collins, 87, of Rantoul, died Thursday afternoon, October 18th, at VA Ileana Healthcare System, Danville. A funeral service was held Thursday, October 25th, at Greater New Light Baptist Church, Rantoul. Burial followed in Maplewood Cemetery, Rantoul. Memorials may be made to Project Mac at projectmac.com. Bonnie K. Einer, 80, of Rankin, mother of a Paxton resident, died Thursday, October 18th at home, surrounded by her family. Funeral services were held Wednesday, October 24th at Grace Lutheran Church, Rankin. Burial followed in Rankin Union Cemetery. Memorials may be made to Grace Lutheran Church, Rankin. For more information or to sign the online guest book, go to einerfuneralhomes.com. Glenn Forrest, 85, of Potomac, died at 6:17 a.m. Friday, October 19th at OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center, Urbana. A celebration of his life was held Tuesday, October 23rd at Blurton Funeral Home, Potomac. Burial followed in Potomac Cemetery with full military honors. Blurton Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. In lieu of other expressions of sympathy, memorials may be made to the Potomac American Legion or the American Heart Association. Memories or photos may be posted on his memorial page at blurtonfuneralhomes.com. Marge Gordon, 92, of Penfield, died Saturday evening, October 20th, at Clark Lindsay Village, Urbana, surrounded by her family. A funeral mass was held Wednesday, October 24th, at St. Lawrence Church. Burial followed in St. Lawrence Cemetery. Judith King, 81, of Paxton, died at 9:34 a.m. Tuesday, October 23rd, at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton. A memorial gathering open house was held Thursday, October 25th. Bayer Family Funeral Services is in charge of arrangements. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Condolences may be offered at bayerfuneralservices.com, Paxton. Carol J. Lee, 87, of Washington, Illinois, formerly of Paxton, died at Wednesday, October 24th, at Villas of Hollybrook, Washington. A massive Christian burial will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, October 27th, at St. Mary Catholic Church, Paxton. Burial will follow in Glen Cemetery, Paxton. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday at Bayer Family Funeral Services, 406 East Pell Street, Paxton, with a rosary at 6:30. Memorials may be made to the American Heart Association, Alzheimer's Association, or an organization of the donor's choice. Condolences may be offered at bayerfuneralservices.com. This concludes the reading of the death notices for the week of October 21st. And we'll finish with local news. From Thomasboro. Central Tavern was the setting once again Sunday for the annual Support the Troops event, a fundraiser to help send care packages to those in the military. Ruby Splitsdosser and her husband Dan have been sending care packages for 12 years to U.S. troops stationed overseas and to the VA hospital in Danville. They have sent more than 4,400 packages. Support the Troops brought in donations throughout the day. Larry Hawk with the Rantoul Knights of Columbus presented Ruby Splitsdosser with a check for $400. Hawk also brought a $150 donation from VFW Post 5520 Auxiliary. Commander Edwin Cook and Senior Vice Commander Adam Yao of VFW Post 5520 of Champaign presented Ruby Splitsdosser with a check of $100. The annual event is held the third Sunday of October. It includes entertainment, free food, and 50-50 drawings. This year's entertainment was the Broken Prairie Band, which donated time to help the cause. Each care package the Splitsdossers send costs around $18. Donations are being accepted to defray the cost of sending the packages. Donations may be sent to the Splitsdossers at Heartland Cleaners, 514 North Commercial Street, Thomasboro, 61878. This has been Tamara reading the Rantoul Press for the week of October 21st. I hope to read with you again soon.